Welcome to Things That Will Help with Buffy Barfoot. This podcast explores what it's like to be human and how to find tools to feel clear, grounded, and happier. The weekly theme will be simple as well as rich and something you can apply to your real life. The human stories ahead do not negate the hard or the dark, but rather point to the lighthouses along the way. This is Buffy. It is really, really early in the morning, and I'm recording this before everybody in my house is awake. I'm still recording these podcasts in my closet, so the clothes can make it sound a little better, and I have morning voice, so sometimes in my life right now, the only little pocket of quiet I get in brain space is really early. So I try to get up at least by 5 every morning so that I can have some creative time. So here we are. Today, I want to talk about a concept that's kind of come up a few times in the past couple of weeks that I thought was interesting and would make a good podcast topic. And it's something that I had not heard of until really recently, or at least I didn't think it was like a thing with a name before now. And that is bystander effect. And so some of you may already know this. The bystander effect occurs when something happens, like somebody's being hurt or violated, or there's some kind of like emergency. And the people who are there to witness, if there's people there to witness this event, just stand by and don't do anything because they assume somebody else who's watching will do something. And it's interesting that statistically, the more people who are bystanders, who are witness, the less likely anybody is going to do anything to help, which just feels really interesting and sad and something kind of worth talking about. So this crossed my path in a book I was reading, and it was also in a news-related article. And so usually when when things cross my path more than once in a couple weeks, I'm like, oh, there's a spark. There's something I need to see. And there's certainly a sadness to this scenario, and I think, you know, we've all been there in some way or another as a bystander that did nothing. And I think most of us do this on different levels when it comes to systemic racism and climate change and all the ways our system is broken and overwhelmingly intertwined with politics and injustice and just this overwhelmed feeling of like, what could I do? And so it got me thinking about responsibility, and I wanted to unpack some of my thoughts about it. It's not just when there's a violation or emergency or systemic overwhelming injustices that we as individuals choose to bypass and look around with our hands up, kind of saying like, who, me? Could I? I couldn't do anything. I think even though that happens all the time, just as often, or maybe even more so, we do this passing off within the structure of our own lives and our personal dreams, even when we're trying to do something healthy or good or make foundational shifts in our lives. For example, I was talking to a friend a while back, and she was wanting to do like a makeover on her nutrition habits. And she wanted to eat foods that are closer to whole, like closer to as natural as possible, and eliminate or greatly reduce anyway processed foods. And she was also wanting to cut down on alcohol and in part do this to lose weight, but also kind of just generally live a healthier life and have more energy. And so she was talking about all this, and I just listened, and she talked a long time about how she had not been feeling good about the way she was eating and how it was important to her, like really important to make these changes. And I try when I'm in that space with somebody, especially when they've kind of made a decision about something, I try not to simply swoop in with solutions, but instead, you know, hold a wide girth of space and let them process and parse it out. But I also, I think, try to ask a couple of pointed questions and just like get curious. And so I said, well, it sounds like you're really clear about the ways that you could bring yourself into greater health and greater energy. How's it going so far? Like how's the experience with boots on the ground? And she rolled her eyes and she said, well, it's not going that well because, you know, she said, I've wanted to get it going, but in the last 6 months I've been traveling and it's really hard to eat well while on the road. And there's, you know, there's been lots of weddings and parties and birthdays and things like that, that I've been invited to. So I haven't been able to cut down on drinking. And before that it was the holidays, and you know how the holidays are, there's so many desserts and all of that. And so I just don't know when my calendar is going to clear up so I can get started on this plan. And I just didn't say anything for a space of time. And I was thinking about her words, and maybe she was too, I'm not sure. But I remember thinking, well, we have to look at our choices and take responsibility for them. Like, I knew that her travel was pleasure and privileged, and of course there are ways to eat well while traveling, but it does take some extra effort and diligence, but it's possible. And you certainly don't have to drink at weddings or birthdays or anywhere for that matter. And the key is here is she was craving this change, but she wasn't to the point where she was willing to make any sacrifice or any amount of discomfort to install it. And the change was her desire and her idea, but she decided that she wasn't able to install it because these things were in her way. And that if those things were not in her way, she could do her healthy plan. And I've definitely found myself in conundrums like this. You know, I think we all have blind spots, all of us. You know, like, I can't start until the kids are back in school. That's one of mine. Like, I have a block sometimes that I can't achieve any kind of self-care or enjoy productive or creative projects when the kids are around. So I just am like all focused on them. And then, you know, I have to wait until they're not here to spread myself out creatively. And I've had to retrain this in myself. And one of the ways I retrain it is that I do it in front of them. I include them. And it may look different than it does when I'm alone. But I try not to discount it completely and wait for the perfect time when they're away and when the house is quiet. And so going back to the bystander effect, I think it's also worth noting that maybe, you know, you can't solve the whole damn thing, but maybe there's one thing you can do. You can call 911. Maybe you can stand up to the bully or voice your concern or tend to the victim afterwards. And maybe when you're traveling, you can't eat totally from scratch like your goal is, like in your own kitchen, but you can find a local farmer's market and get some local fresh veggies, or you can cut your drinks in half at the wedding, or some small step towards your goal and what matters to you overall. You know, or maybe your kids are crawling all over you and you suggest that everybody take 30 minutes to produce a creative project, and you give them construction paper, and, you know, maybe you write on the porch while they do sidewalk chalk, and then you all share your work at the end, and then you have a win-win-win. And I think it's a relief to remember that it doesn't have to be all or nothing, but a couple of little things a day can inch you towards your goals and where you want to be. But I think we have to take responsibility for our own lives and our dreams, and it's really easy to get sidetracked. And sometimes it's preferable to get sidetracked. But I think we have to then tether ourselves back to what we want the most. It's easy to say why we got derailed and why that was not our fault, but eventually that bypassing will turn into self-loathing and resentment if we're not conscious of it. And then there's, of course, trauma. There are things that have happened to us in our childhoods when we were forming, things that were done and said and branded into us. Some traumas more debilitating than others, of course. And some were created by our very own parents or caregivers, and some are perpetuating to this day, and the cycle continues. And I never want to discount these types of stories, how trauma becomes embedded in our cells and are imprinted in some way onto everything that we do and choose. But I also believe that there's a certain point for everybody in their life where they wake up to the realization that their life is their own. And for some, it happens very young, and it's often accelerated because they are not being properly supported as a child. So they realize when they are little that if they don't make it happen, nobody will. So they find that fortitude and that confidence early, because they look around and don't see support, which is just difficult. And for other people, I think it could come on the heels of a tragic loss, like the world as they know it shatters. The white gloves come off, and then they look around and realize that they better get busy creating the life they desire. Losing Benjamin for me was a catalyst like this. It propelled me into creating myself and choosing not to lose any more time. And I remember another time when I felt this too, a few years before Benjamin died. Actually, I had just graduated from college with a BFA in dance, and I wanted to dance professionally, but there was a lot of doubt, and I wasn't sure I was good enough to make it. And I also wasn't sure if I should plant myself in Chicago or New York City. And I was talking to one of my dance professors, Cornelius Carter, and he said to me with earnest, "Buffy, nobody is going to want it for you. You have to want it enough for yourself." And even then, with all of your might, that still might not be enough. And I've thought about that conversation so many times over the years. And at that time, for me, it was about being in a dance company. But right now, this applies to my writing and finishing and publishing this book that's inside of me. And I know cellularly, no one is going to want it enough for me, that I have to want it enough. And even then, with all of my might, it still might not be enough. But I have to be whole body in. And so I write on days when I'm busy. I write on days when I'm mothering, when I'm traveling, days when there's a wedding, a birthday, my birthday, days when I've received really bad news. I have built the muscle now that I prioritize it and feed it daily because I want it enough. And so today, I ask you, what do you want? How much do you want it? And what are you going to do to get it? And instead of deflecting responsibility and looking around to see if the weather's going to change or things to line up perfectly, instead, how can you suit up and get in the ring? I think sometimes something has to scare us for us to make a change. I don't have great genetics when it comes to my teeth and gums. I've never really been that lucky. And usually I have some kind of problem when I go to the dentist. I have a lot of anxiety about dentists. And historically, I've done okay at dental care, but I don't always floss every day. My electric toothbrush, sometimes the 2 minutes you're supposed to brush feels like forever. And I turn it off and like only do 1 minute because I get in a hurry. And so admittedly, I've been kind of mediocre at keeping all the dental plates spinning. Well, about 4 months ago, I went to the dentist and she scared me. She said, for somebody your age who seems healthy in many ways, your gums don't look that good. She said, you need to step up your game or you're headed for gum disease. Whew. And so she was serious. And she said she wanted to see me back in 4 months. And if she did not see an improvement, she was going to need to take more extreme measures, which she did not describe. But I was pretty freaked out. And when I was really honest with myself, I knew I could do better than I was doing. So I bought a water pick and I set to work. And for 4 months, I'd never skipped. I water picked both morning and night. I brushed the whole 2 minutes, 3 times a day. I spent time on it. I prioritized it and I never let anything get in the way of that. And yesterday I went in for the checkup, for the 4 month checkup. And she looked around my mouth and she kept saying, wow, this is really good. This is different. Your gums look like so coral pink and healthy and strong. And I got this glowing report. It made me feel really good because I knew that I had done everything I could. And I know this is a small example, but I think it's important that nobody's going to do it for you. And there's always going to be an obstacle and there's always going to be something else that you could prioritize. And you won't always feel like it's possible to fit it in. But I return to those three questions. What do you want? How much do you want it? And what are you going to do to get it? This life is yours. And it includes the influence, the imprint, and the imagination of others, certainly. But it is yours to curate, to live, and to create. Do not let anything or anybody or any past event block your path. Use the fire from your frustration, your uncomfortability to transform you, to motivate you. Use it for discipline and fortitude. And listen, get low to the ground and listen to what your heart longs for and be willing to walk the walk to get there. It's worth it, the things that you have to give up along the way. Otis, my 8-year-old, saves his holiday candy in a box, and he never has more than one piece a day. And he makes it last until the next holiday. He's been doing this since he was a tiny little boy. He's always seen the virtue in delaying gratification for what you really want down the way. He has more of a handle on this than most adults I know, actually. And he came in this way. I can't take credit for that. Though it's important to harness our own lives, to take responsibility and to brick our days in our own hands, I also think it makes our paths better and brighter when we share them with the people we value and we love, people we are inspired by and people that move us. We're meant to do this work of being human in concert with each other, in conversation with each other. Today, I want to leave you with one of my favorite Walt Whitman passages. This is from Song of Myself, Leaves of Grass. Stop this day and night with me, and you shall possess the origin of all poems. You shall possess the good of the earth and sun. You shall no longer take things at second or third hand, nor look through the eyes of the dead, nor feed on the specters in books. You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen to all sides and filter them from yourself. I tramp a perpetual journey. My signs are a rainproof coat, good shoes, and a staff cut from the woods. No friend of mine takes his ease in my chair. I have no chair, no church, no philosophy. I lead no man to a dinner table, library, exchange. But each man and each woman of you I lead upon a knoll, my left hand hooking you round the waist, my right hand pointing to landscapes of continents and the public road. Not I, not anyone can travel that road for you. You must travel it for yourself. It is not far. It is within reach. Perhaps you have been on it since you were born and did not know. Perhaps it is everywhere, on water and on land. Shoulder your duds and I will mine, and let us hasten forth. Wonderful cities and free nations we shall fetch as we go. If you tire, give me both burdens and rest the chuff of your hand on my hip. And in due time, you shall repay the same service to me, for after we start, we never lie by again. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. Thank you for supporting this work by listening. I cherish you, and this work feels really important to me. And I know from the emails that I get from you, it's sparking something in you too. If you are enjoying this podcast, please consider becoming a patron. You can do that with the link in the show notes. Join our very sweet community. And I hope that you have a really good week. Take care.